interesting. Because as many preachers, and I'm sure many congregations, have asked in the past, how? How is that relevant to our lives? The Bible passage for today. After all, we've spent the last couple of months looking through Paul's letter to the Colossian church. And we have gone to the pinnacle of abstract, deep philosophical reasoning. And we've gone quite low to the real boots on the ground, day-to-day practical instruction that Paul had. It feels like we've done it all. And now we have this last section, which just sounds a lot like a very long list of names of people we don't really know. And it's a hi from Paul, or greetings from them. How is that relevant to us today in the 21st century? Well, Colossians wasn't written to us. It wasn't. But it was written for us. And there is a reason why God has preserved the letter of Colossians for us today. And after studying this section throughout the week, I am convinced that the riches of this passage are like a gold mine. You've been to a gold mine before, right? You don't just walk around and just, oh, found some gold. That's not how a gold mine works. Instead, you've got to dig deep. You've got to go underground. There's a bit of effort. And today is the same. As we do a bit of effort, and as we look at, in particular, two people that Paul highlighted in his letter, you are going to find riches, my friends. You are going to find riches. And today, it's going to be a little shorter, the sermon, God willing. And we're actually going to do an activity as a church afterwards in response to the two examples that God has for us here in Colossians. So let me introduce you to the first person. His name is Tychicus. Let's have a look at him. Tychicus will tell you all about my activities. He's a beloved brother and a faithful minister and a fellow servant in the Lord. I have sent him to you for this very purpose, that you may know how we are and he may encourage your hearts. Do you remember Tychicus from when we started this series? In chapter 1? Tychicus and Onesimus were tasked with bringing this special letter to the Colossian church. It was a long journey. And Tychicus reappears here again. And he is, if you look into his life, an incredible bloke. Tychicus, we first discover about him in Acts chapter 20, in the latter half of Paul's ministry. He doesn't come onto the scene early. He comes in relatively late. And Tychicus is a bloke who has quite a history with Paul. He was himself a native of Turkey, where Colossia is found. And if you want an easy way to remember him, think of Tychicus the Traveller. Tychicus the Traveller. That's how you should remember him. Because he was active. Paul constantly commissioned Tychicus to travel to all different places in the Mediterranean world. He likely travelled from Rome in modern-day Italy all the way to Ephesus and Colossae in modern-day Turkey. And back then, the only way you could travel were foot, boat, horse. Foot, boat, horse. That's all you really had. And Tychicus travelled roughly, according to ChatGPT, when I ran the maths, he travelled roughly 3,000 to 4,000 kilometres in his ministry. Yes, Elliot. Now, some of you, though, you might be like, 3,000, 4,000 Ks? I do that every month in my job. Well, yeah, in your vehicle. If you ask anyone who's actually done long-distance sailing, long-distance horse riding, or long-distance hiking, they will tell you between 3,000 to 4,000 kilometres is a long distance. And yet, Tychicus was willing to go on a mission, and his constant travel was crucial to the health of the early church. But what was Tychicus's mission? What was he travelling all this way to do? Well, Tychicus's main mission was to be both an updater and an encourager. Have a look at the passage in verse 8, where Paul says, I'll show you where verse 8 is. There. I have sent him, Tychicus, I've sent him to you for this very purpose, that you may know how we are and that he may encourage your hearts. We also read in Ephesians chapter 6, so that you also may know how I am and what I am doing, Tychicus, the beloved brother and faithful minister in the Lord, will tell you everything. I have sent him to you for this very purpose, that you may know how we are and that he may encourage your hearts. In both Ephesians and Colossians, Paul is sending Tychicus to the Christians in these churches to update them and to encourage them. And Tychicus is even more than that. You can read in the book of Titus that Paul is seriously considering sending Tychicus to look after Titus's church in Crete, so that Titus could get a bit of freedom and go meet Paul in another city somewhere and catch up for a time. An updater, an encourager, a potential replacement minister. What a bloke. And as we look back on his life, we have to ask ourselves the question, how does his example make a difference for us today? Because, well, let's be honest, we don't need traveling updaters anymore. We can get real-time update from Christians on the other side of the world through a Zoom call after church, if you want to. That's easy done. You can text someone on the other side of the world, and they'll probably get back to you if it's the right time zone and they're awake in a couple of minutes for updates. And I know a number of us here might be part of the Barnes's prayer meeting that they do every Sunday. The Barnes's, our missionary couple in Turkey, they hold prayer meetings, and you can get updates tonight if you want and pray for them about what's going on. Thank God we don't need traveling updaters anymore. But what about potential church ministry? Well, we certainly do need that. We certainly do need that. We need godly men who are willing to serve the church and the world with the gifts that they have to step up, especially out west. I don't know if you've ever gone out west here in Australia and seen the churches out there, but they are crying out for people to come to them and to minister to them. And we need godly women with fire in their heart and a passion for people to move out, to go forth into the fruitful fields that God has assigned for them, spiritually speaking, and to make a difference in churches. We need people to do ministry, but not all of us are called to full-time ministry, let's be honest. This room is full of people with a wide variety of gifts and abilities. That is some of the needs we have, but I reckon there's something we can all do here. Every single one of us, wherever we are, we can be encouragers. We can be encouragers. Whether you're a follower of Jesus or not here today, we can all agree on how good encouragement actually is. It's something so simple and so powerful. Have you ever had someone come along to you when you're just really unmotivated, or you're just really tired, and their presence and their conversation, it's like a cold drink on a hot day? You ever had someone like that? I reckon you have. We need encouragement. And how little encouragement will propel us so far. You don't need to sit down and have someone encourage you for 50 minutes. Just 1 minute's enough. And how far we can go with that. We need encouragers, and we can all do this. And I think of my nana in this space. I grew up most of my childhood in Crow's Nest. And my nana, she lived just around the corner from us. Could go over whenever I wanted to see Nana. And we'd always go over there, eat some Vickies, have a yarn, Nanas are amazing for that. And I would always remember that no matter how I arrived, I would always leave feeling better or encouraged. It doesn't matter how I arrived. Because my Nana, she was a real encourager. She wasn't a loud extrovert, but she just had a way, right? She just had a way. And when I was training to do 100 meter sprints in high school, she'd be there with the stopwatch at the end of the street as I'd go along. And whether I'd hit a personal best or whether, again, I was below by a bit, I would always walk away confident because that's who she is. And I'm thankful for her. I can't forget her. And I reckon we all have someone like that in our lives. And we're called to be a people like that, to be encouragers. Check out this verse that's addressed to Christians on the topic of encouragement. From Hebrews chapter 10. The Christian's call to encourage others. Let us consider how to stir one another up to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Right there, friends, right there is the Christian call for us to be encouragers. And do you notice how often we should encourage? Up there it says, we should encourage all the more as we see the day drawing near. What is the day, capital D? Well, it's the day of Christ's return. It's the day of the Lord. And the closer we are to Christ's return, the more we should encourage one another. Now, let me ask you this. Who is closer to Christ's return? Us or the early church 2,000 years ago? Well, it's us, right? Therefore, we should be the most encouraging generation to have ever walked the planet. Because the generation that is closest to Christ's return should be the one who encourages more. And I hope and pray that if Christ doesn't come back by the year 2100, there'll be Christians who will be the most encouraging Christians in history. Because the closer we are, the more encouraging we are called to be. Not just us corporately, but you and I as well as individuals. So, are we closer today? Are we closer? Because that is our calling. And we serve the God of encouragement, according to Romans 15, verse 5. Romans 15, verse 5 says that God is the God of encouragement. So it makes sense that his disciples are encouragers as well. So, are you an encourager? Are you someone who motivates, not berates, motivates those around you to bigger and better things? When was the last time you encouraged someone? Personally, can you remember the last time you encouraged someone? Now, I do understand some people seem to be born encouragers and the rest of us need to be made. But God's in the making business. He's in the business of fashioning people towards his image, towards being more like him. And as the ultimate encourager, God gives us plenty of examples of what encouragement looks like. God encourages us through the voice of a friend. God encourages us through an insightful quote we saw on social media. He might encourage us through hearing the word preached, or through if you crack open a Bible and you're reading it yourself. He might encourage you by a simple pat on the shoulder, someone who cares. And we're all called to be a person who encourages others, because with the encouragement we've received, we are to pass it on. That's how the funnel works. That's how God's lined up humanity and how he's lined up his people to operate. And we need to trust God and ask him for the ability to meaningfully encourage others. And this week, I want to encourage you to follow the God-given example of Tychicus. And practically speaking, I want to encourage you to encourage two people this week. That's my challenge. Find yourself two people to encourage this week. Now, Let me get in early. Spouses don't count. Okay? Because I know many of you, you have phenomenal spouses and you let them know. And I'm glad we have that culture in our church. Nah, spouses don't count. I want to encourage you to find two different people and to encourage them this week. And let me give you some tips on how to do that. If we could, Bryn. How to become an encourager. If you are new to the idea of encourager, if you're not sure how it works and you don't want to be awkward, start with a general broad encouragement of someone. Say, like, you did well to the person you're trying to encourage. Or, let me encourage you to keep trusting God. Simple, broad, good job, mate. Okay? Start simple. Start general. You can't go wrong. And it does make a difference for people. Especially if you're not someone who encourages. When you open your mouth and start encouraging, people will look at you a little bit different. And it's a lot more meaningful when someone who doesn't encourage starts to encourage compared to someone who's just always encouraging. So, secondly, if you're an experienced encourager, I want to urge you to grow to become more specific and more focused in your encouragement, because encouragement can lose its weight. If you're constantly encouraging people, eventually everyone goes, oh yeah, that's just Doug. Or, oh yeah, that's just Ben, right? He always says that stuff. No, get specific. Get focused. For example, you did well to handle that person the way you did. See, that's specific. Or, let me encourage you to trust God with that particular issue at work. Specific, particular, focused. And we can all grow in this. So friends, that's the challenge. Two people this week at your level of experience in encouraging people. Let's do it. Let's follow on to that. Now, after that, I think if we encourage two people this week, each one of us, and as I look around this room, if we each did it, I reckon we might have encouraged 100 people. If we got 50 people in this room, we would have encouraged as a church 100 people this week. And let's not cap it at 100. We live in a culture that drags people down, a culture of toxic discouragement. So, and because we live in a city and we live in families where discouragement is present, there's a dire need for it. So let's become people of encouragement whose words bring life to others. And let's become a church whose gatherings are like an oasis of encouragement to people who are regulars and visitors alike. And Tychicus, he's a role model of this. And now we're going to move on to our second and final role model today that God has. And this is a bloke named Epaphras. Epaphras. When I think of famous people in the Bible, I do not think of Epaphras. I think it's a shame. He should be on your radar and my radar more often. Because out of everyone that Stuart read in that passage today, Paul gives Epaphras the most amount of time. Have a look. Epaphras, who is one of you, a servant of Christ Jesus, greets you, always struggling on your behalf in his prayers, that you might stand mature and fully assured in all the will of God. For I bear him witness that he's worked hard for you and for those in Laodicea and Hierapolis. Now, you might remember at the beginning of our sermon series, Epaphras actually started the Colossian church. He's the bloke who most of the recipients of this letter heard the gospel from and decided to follow Jesus with. He was a faithful servant. He was a fellow minister of Christ. And it's possible that because of all his effort, Epaphras is now imprisoned with Paul, because in the letter to Philemon, we read Paul talking about Epaphras as his fellow prisoner. So it's likely that Epaphras and Paul are both got chains around their wrists, essentially. And if Epaphras was imprisoned with Paul, then Paul would know all about Epaphras' prayer life. Because when you're chained next to someone, you get to know them pretty well. And Paul would say that Epaphras was a person of prayer. And there's no one quite like him in all of the New Testament. Have a look at that up here on the board where it says, Epaphras is, catch this, always struggling on your behalf in his prayers. Struggling in prayer. When I think of prayer, I don't think of the image of struggle. Not at all. Do you think of prayer as a struggle in such terms? Epaphras did. And in fact, the Greek word that we have for struggling there is translated as strive in Romans 15:30, when Paul asks people to strive together with him in prayer for God. Struggling, striving, that is the New Testament language for prayer. And there's almost a Jacob-esque flashback you might be getting right now if you've been a Christian for a while. Remember how Jacob was wrestling with who we found out later was God, incarnate in human form, and he's wrestling with God and asking for a blessing? It's a similar image, a wrestling with God. Now, of course, we all know that you can't wrestle with God and try to wrench a blessing out of his hand without God Almighty's consent. That doesn't work. But there's this idea of struggling and striving. It's the idea of an intense activity that focuses your mind and your body and every part of you in a singular direction. A singular direction. What you're praying for is what you're focused on. And you are going for it. You are going for it with everything you've got. With athleticism, if you will, is another way of looking at this. That is the prayer. That's the way Epaphras is praying. And what's his bullseye? What's he aiming for with everything he's got? He's aiming that the Colossians might stand mature and fully assured in all the will of God. Now, we all know what mature means. It means we're more like Jesus, that we'll be more like him. That's easy. We know what he's saying there. But what about that bit up there where he talks about this idea of being fully assured in all the will of God? What does that mean? Let me tell you what I think it doesn't mean. I don't think it's Epaphras praying, Lord, I really pray that every person in Colossae will know God's individual will for their lives. For example, I'm praying that Hyrania will know that it's God's will for her to accept that new job opportunity. That Aristarchus will know that it's God's will for him to buy that new plot of land. I don't think that's what he's praying for. Instead, I think that Epaphras is praying strongly, at the very least, that the Colossian church will know that God's will, as taught by Jesus and the apostles, really is God's will. I'll say that again. That God's will, as taught by Jesus and the apostles, really is God's will. Now you say to me, Doug, of course they would know that. Of course they wouldn't. They would know that. That, yeah, Jesus and the apostles are teaching God's will. That's a given. Sure. But are they fully convinced? Because just because you believe something doesn't mean you're fully convinced. It doesn't mean you're fully assured. And I believe, at very least, Epaphras is praying that they will be fully convinced, fully assured that what Jesus and the apostles teach is the will of God. And I say that because it's precisely at this point that the Colossian false teachers were attacking. You remember? The Colossian false teachers were trying to denigrate Jesus, saying he wasn't the ultimate authority, spiritually speaking. And that would be attacking Paul's teaching as well. But Epaphras is praying. He's struggling. He's saying, may they know that God's will really is seen in Jesus and the apostolic teaching. And Satan and his legions, they've always been pushing on that pressure point. They've always been trying to undermine this fact. They have always tried to lessen the Christian's conviction, whether in 100 AD, 1400 AD, or the 21st century, that Jesus and the apostles really have passed on God's will. Think about it today. Theological progressivism that says Paul maybe got it wrong. Or theological progressivism that teaches that Jesus, he's like a really good Middle Eastern Gandhi. He's got wisdom, but he's not like God. He's just another wise bloke. Theological progressivism, false religions, like in Islam, where we read that Jesus was not the Son of God whatsoever. And when he died on the cross, that was actually a deception. When he died on the cross, that was someone else. Jesus never died on the cross, never paid for our sins. Or maybe it's just modern day mysticism, that new but ancient heresy, which says, you don't need Jesus, you don't need the apostles, just go in your room, turn on your meditation app, empty your mind, focus in on yourself, and you will receive enlightenment into the spiritual realm. It's an old shtick. It's been going for a while. And it's been trying to undermine our full assurance that Jesus and the apostolic teaching is the will of God. Satan has been busy. Epaphras saw it so many years ago, and he struggles in his prayers. And he prays that they will live, not just that they will not live by lies, but rather they would stand maturely, with steel in their spines and a full confidence in the will of God as handed to us. And my friends, take a look around. We're on the same battlefield. The trench lines may have changed. The buildings are a little bit different. But we're in the same spiritual war. The same demonic host that knew the face of Paul and Epaphras knows your face. The same angelic host that ministered to the Christians of the Church of Colossae minister to the Christians today in the 21st century, minister to us. And the same Jesus who has won his cosmic, colossal struggle against Satan through his resurrection is marching forward. Jesus, according to Isaiah 42:2, will not grow faint and he will not grow discouraged until he establishes justice on the earth. Jesus' kingdom is an unstoppable steamroller moving forward. That's the biblical teaching, and history ultimately is on our side as we are part of Christ's victorious army. But the battle isn't over yet, not by a long shot. There are more spiritual battles to be won before Christ returns. There are more of God's chosen people to be brought into the kingdom. More Christians to be encouraged and matured before heaven's victory. And I firmly believe that we as a church should respond to this concluding chapter of Colossians. It's one thing to hear the benefits of encouragement, the timeless power of Epaphras' passionate prayers, but it's another thing to do. So in light of what we've read, we're going to have a time of prayer now together as a church, and for each other, and for the wider world. We're going to split up into groups of round about 3 or 4 people each. And, if we could put that up, Bren. And I'm going to ask that once you find your group of 3 or 4 people, that you pray Epaphras' timeless prayer that Christians at Eastgate and across the world can be mature, fully assured in all the will of God. And I'd also like to ask you to pray individually for each other as well, if you have time. If you're not a Christian here today, you're welcome to join a group, but you certainly don't have to pray. There's no pressure in that space. So, split up into groups of 3 or 4, praying for Christians here and everywhere. We might be mature in our faith, fully assured in all the will of God. Pray for each other individually, if you're happy to share some individual prayer points. And we've got around maybe 15 minutes to do it. So let's split up. Let's make it happen.